Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. We are eager to offer amazingly competitive prices, plus an additional $1,000 Costco discount on all new Cherry Hill Volvos. When leasing or purchasing a new or certified Cherry Hill Volvo, you become a valued part of our team. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Now, 60 minutes of nonstop talk on the Rich Cioli podcast.
I was realizing the other day that I'm not getting all my mail. It's a true story because where's it going? What's happening? Well, I'm not alone. Apparently, story in the Daily News today about mail delays and missing mail. All as we look towards a mail-in election coming up in November. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. 855-839-1210 is the number on Twitter, at Rich Zeoli. The FDA Commissioner, Dr. Stephen Hahn, will be here in just a few minutes at 745. But, you know, I was thinking about the mail-in ballot issue, and I saw that the Pennsylvania mail ballot problems kept tens of thousands from voting in the primary election. And I also saw United States Postal Service mail delays in Philadelphia amid Postal Service staff shortages, package boom, and policy changes. This is happening now as well. And a while ago, I signed up for this thing. It's a USPS informed Daily Digest. So they send you pictures of all the mail you're going to receive that day. And I haven't gotten it all. I've got the email that it was coming, but I'm missing mail. So somebody I know was going to give me an estimate for something, and they mail it to me, and I saw in my email that morning that it was set to arrive that afternoon. I didn't get it. I called them up. I said, well, I never got it. I saw you sent it because I got the scan from the Postal Service saying that it was coming, but I never got the actual physical letter. So there's a thing you can check on there. I didn't receive this mail, and you check that, and then they go, thank you for your feedback. But I thought, this isn't the first time this has happened, so what's happening here? And clearly now, there's issues going on with the Postal Service. There's no doubt about that. And I was reading in the Daily News about this, and I mean, there's been a package boom. Everybody's sending more things nowadays than they have been before. And they're also having a staffing shortage. And then thousands of people who did not get to vote in the primary elections in Pennsylvania because of mail ballot problems. And I thought, man, this coming election is going to be, it's going to be a doozy when it comes to all this stuff. It really is. It's going to be an absolute doozy. But the best thing, of course, that could happen to Joe Biden was for the media to just ignore him. You know, he stays in his basement and he stays away from everybody, and he's not out on the campaign trail. I mean, really, for Joe Biden right now, this is the best for him. This is possible to be out there, just to be in his basement and not have to go out there. There's talk that maybe Joe Biden won't debate. And that's been great for him. And I think the mail-in balloting is probably going to help him, too. It's important to understand that right now, voting is set to begin in some of these early states. That's right. Voting is going to begin in early states starting very, very soon. And so the question becomes, how do you change your strategy to account for that? How do you change your strategy to account for the early voting that's going to start taking place in states like very, very soon? What do you do? Now, if you think about the problems and the delays in the Postal Service, you think about missing mail, if you think about the fact that they're short-staffed, if you think about all these things, you think about the election, you think about how the Democrats are organized in terms of getting ready for these mail-in ballots, you think about the kind of just absolute shenanigans that could occur and all this stuff, it could make for a very, very long election night, but maybe not. In other words, Joe Biden is looking at polling numbers right now, and he thinks to himself, I got this. His consultants think to himself, they got this. But the problem, though, is that when you get cocky and you get arrogant, you start taking things for granted, you make really bad mistakes, really bad mistakes. You never want to run on the idea that you got this thing in the bag. Let me prove this to you. So, first of all, Democrats right now, on the left, the far progressives of the party, the kooks of the party, they are so proud of the fact they've been able to move Joe Biden left. Here is Representative Ilhan Omar, member of the infamous squad with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So Democrat Representative Ilhan Omar, what she has had the opportunity to do now, she and her ilk cut six.
Right now, we have a candidate for president within the Democratic Party, who I just endorsed and brought along many of our constituents to get behind and support Joe Biden as the president, because I understand that we've now had an opportunity to move his platform to be more progressive, the most progressive platform a president has ever run on the Democratic side.
Now, in order to get progressives like her to say that, you think about how Joe Biden has had to really go hard left on things like the environment, for example, and Medicare for All and all the other things that they really, really want. Bernie Sanders was on MSNBC over the weekend talking to Ali Velshi. Well, he's going to do everything he possibly can to help continue to move Joe Biden far left, cut number 12.
It is true that many of our supporters are younger people, non-traditional voters, and it is absolutely imperative that they come out and vote. And I just want to say one thing. No great secret that Joe Biden and I disagree on a number of issues. That's a fact. But what we are engaged in now is what we call coalition politics. We're going to fight out our differences after Biden is elected. Uh-huh. But right now, the immediate task is to come together to defeat Trump. And then, as progressives, we're going to do everything that we can to make the Biden administration the most progressive administration that it can become. But right now, my message to our supporters, hey, not only you get out to vote, vote early, but get your friends, your coworkers, your co-students out to vote as well.
Now, think about that from the perspective of moderate voters. Moderate voters don't want to hear that. When you hear the Trump campaign say Joe Biden is a Trojan horse for the far left, when you hear them talk like that, you should understand that they're not just making this up out of thin air. They're discussing a real fact, which is that the progressives are out there saying to their people, look, just trust us. Just vote for the guy. We got this. We can take this guy. We can control him. We can control him. Don't worry about it. Now, that should say a lot to you right there. That should say a lot. That they're so confident that they can control Joe Biden that they want their supporters to vote for him. Now, if they did not believe, A, that they could control Joe Biden, or B, that Joe Biden could win with their support, they wouldn't give it. They would teach the DNC a message. They would teach them a lesson. You got stuck with 4 years of Trump. Next time, do it our way. But they're so convinced Joe Biden will do whatever it takes to get elected, and he'll sell his soul to them. They're fine with that. They're fine. They're good. They're good. Take it. Take it. And that's the problem right now. See, I think moderate voters listen to this stuff and get scared. I do. I really believe that. I think moderate voters hear Bernie Sanders and Ilhan Omar and these other people discussing how Joe Biden's going to be the most progressive president in history. And in their mind, they hear things like tax increases, less jobs. Certainly voters who live out in Pennsylvania, outside of Pittsburgh, who work in the energy sector, they hear that. They think my job is done. I've got no chance here. So, you know, it's very easy to look at the polls right now. It's very easy to look at the way things are going with the coronavirus and the economy and to think, too, well, this election's over. But I don't know, a lot of these voters, they're going to look around and they're going to say to themselves, do I really want a guy who's going to be the most progressive president in American history when my industry has a giant target on its back from progressives? We're talking about four or five states here that are going to make their determination. I mean, yeah, Biden may crush it in California, but who cares? California, you, no matter what, you get the same number of electoral votes, whether you crush it or not. I think the Biden campaign is running a very dumb strategy here. And the strategy is we still need to win over progressive voters. The reason why Bernie Sanders is saying, I'm telling my people to vote for Joe Biden, is because progressives have not made their mind up yet on him. So in order to win them over, he's got to say to them, trust me, we got this. His guy will do what we want. And Joe Biden is so fearful that if he doesn't, that he won't get their votes, that he's got to give them everything that they want. Now, what does that tell you about their internal polls? Tells me that they know this election is a whole lot closer than it looks. You know, it's one thing to look at it from the top down. It's one thing to look at it from the top down and go, oh, well, I mean, this thing is over. Nah, it's not over. You know why? Because it's all about turnout. And if you've got progressives are so worried that you're not going to have the kind of turnout for Joe Biden that you need, that they've got to go out there and almost beg their people to go out and vote for him by promising that you're going to get another FDR out of this guy. What does that tell you? I think this election is a whole lot closer than people realize. I do. I think it's a whole lot closer than people realize within these states that matter. Maybe not nationally because you're looking at national polls, but if you look at polling data, internals, I don't know. I'm just saying, if you look at these things, it's going to be very, very tight, I think, in these states is my point. 855-839-1210. Part of the strategy, obviously, of the Democrats is to completely erode the confidence in Americans over the president's handling of the coronavirus. Even the people like Fauci and Birx are now targets as well. Deborah Birx is definitely a target. There's no doubt about that. So Nancy Pelosi went out there and she was talking about Deborah Birx and Dr. Birx, who I think has done a very good job. I mean, people really like what she has to say. She seems very reasonable and rational. And then Pelosi attacked her, saying that she doesn't believe that Dr. Birx doesn't have any confidence in her. Cut number 10.
Madam Speaker, I want to ask you, we just have a couple more minutes here. Politico reported that in a closed meeting on Friday, you accused Dr. Deborah Birx of the coronavirus task force of spreading disinformation about the pandemic. Is that true? And do you have confidence in her?
I think the president is spreading disinformation about the virus, and she is his appointee. So I don't have confidence there, no.
And then Birx defended herself on CNN State of the Union over the weekend regarding Pelosi's allegations. Cut 11.
I just have to ask you before we go, the House Speaker on another network just said that she does not have confidence in either the president or you, Dr. Birx. Do you want to respond?
I have tremendous respect for the speaker. And I have tremendous respect for her long dedication to the American people. And I think it was unfortunate that New York Times wrote this article without speaking to me. I could have brought forth the data. I provide data every single day with an analysis. The day that they're talking about, that I was, quote, Pollyannish, it said there was improvement in the New York Metro, but ongoing cases in Boston and Chicago, a new outbreak in Houston in full logarithmic spread, and new concerning outbreaks in Baltimore, New Haven, and Washington, D.C. This was not a Pollyannish view. I have never been called Pollyannish or non-scientific or non-data-driven. And I will stake my 40-year career on those fundamental principles of utilizing data to really implement better programs to save more lives.
Well, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that a big part of the reason why Pelosi hates Deborah Birx is because she always wears scarves around her neck. And there's no doubt that Pelosi looks at that as it's unfair.
Wait, is Pollyannish like a sexist kind of a term? I'm just asking, you know.
I don't know. You tell me. You're kind of Pollyannish when it comes to your son playing football.
I am not Pollyannish. I am a freaking warrior. Are you kidding me?
You're a warrior. I don't know. I mean, Pollyannish, I guess it could be a sexist. Can Pelosi be sexist to Birx?
Sure.
Because why? Because Pelosi is non... Like vampires don't have a gender.
I thought a sexist term is a sexist term.
If a woman uses it against another woman, it's still sexist.
Right. If she called her the B word, that would be right.
Well, she has in private, no doubt. I wish that B would take those scarves off and give me access to that beautiful neck of hers. Scarves. It sounds to me like would she say that about Fauci, that he was being Pollyannish?
Yeah.
How would Fauci respond to that, too? I don't even know what that means, Pollyannish. I don't even know. Well, that's the reason why Pelosi doesn't like her. That's the only reason. That's just it. I'm telling you right now. Dr. Hahn will be here in just a moment, the commissioner of the FDA.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
But I want to go right now to our very special guest, the commissioner of the United States Food and Drug Administration, Dr. Stephen Hahn. Hey, Dr. Hahn, good morning. Welcome back to Philadelphia.
Hey, Rich, good morning. My best to everybody in Philly. I hope you and your family are doing well.
Well, how are you doing through all this? I mean, you're working nonstop here in all this.
It's pretty much nonstop, but you know what? It really is an honor to work on behalf of the American people. They're so deserving of the absolute best, so... It's okay. We want to get through this.
Let's talk about plasma, because I heard last week you had there was a big event regarding plasma therapy. Those individuals who've had COVID-19 and have beaten it, their plasma may be the key, right, to help fighting this?
Yeah, plasma has been used over many years, over 100 years, to fight infections. We're waiting for the data from a Mayo Clinic study to know how effective it is against COVID-19. But there's a great demand for it. Doctors have been ordering this for COVID-19 patients. It's basically what you said. Take the plasma from folks who've recovered and give it to those who are sick and transfer that immunity. So while we're waiting on the information, we do know that it is safe and doctors are ordering it. And so we've really encouraged everyone to donate, because at the end of the day, plasma can be used for other things as well. And there is a nationwide shortage of plasma. So the more people who've contracted this can donate, the better. And a couple things, Rich. One is you can donate up to a couple times a week, and you can donate a couple times a month. So it's different from regular blood donation.
And where do you donate? Just is there a certain place you do it?
Yeah, you bet. So you can go to the American Red Cross website. You can also go to your local plasma center. But easy enough, you can go to the COVID-19 websites for both Health and Human Services and the White House, and there'll be a link there. You can click on it, and it'll get you to your closest plasma donation center.
Dr. Stephen Hahn, when you think about the advances that you and your agency have made this past year in terms of, first of all, Operation Warp Speed, a vaccine, there was a lot of discussion on Friday with Dr. Anthony Fauci over the vaccine. And, you know, there's been some claims by certain candidates for president that this vaccine would be rushed. It would not be scientific. The FDA would just sign off on it because of politics. Can you quell people's fears on that, the idea that you yourself or anybody in your agency would play politics with a COVID-19 vaccine?
Yeah, Rich, that's a really great question. And there have been concerns raised about that. Just a couple things about it. One is FDA is not officially part of Operation Warp Speed. We're providing technical assistance and information to everybody who's developing vaccines. And we have over 50 in the agency who've come forward. And there are a number of those vaccine producers that are outside of Operation Warp Speed. That's one. Number two, we have done everything possible to expedite the review process. So we're not changing our criteria. What we're doing is try to make it easier on folks to develop the vaccine. But at the end of the day, we are going to judge the vaccine for safety and efficacy based upon the criteria we've outlined. And you probably know, Rich, we published in June what those criteria are. And it was very well received by the scientific and medical community, because at the end of the day, we have to have very strong criteria. And the people of America need assurance that we're going to do our job, and we will. We have the best vaccine review team in the world. They've been doing this for years, and they won't cut corners. We won't cut corners. We will make the absolute best decision. If at the end of the day a vaccine isn't safe and effective, we won't authorize it or approve it.
I'm glad to hear you say that, Dr. Hahn, because I think it's irresponsible of anybody to suggest otherwise. Why people, the scientists at the FDA, there's zero interest for anybody over there to want to see something that isn't safe or effective to be used, especially when you're combating this pandemic. I mean, that would be such an enormous waste of time. At the least, it would be a gigantic waste of time. Of course, at worst, it would be very dangerous. So I think it's really irresponsible of people to even raise a suggestion that this vaccine could not be real.
And you know what, Rich? It's insulting to the scientists at our agency who would, you're right, never in a million years do this. None of us would. This is about protecting other Americans. This is about doing the right thing in this pandemic. And I can just assure you 100%, we thought a lot about this. We put out our criteria. We will be very rigorous about it. And we won't cut corners. Now, we want it as soon as possible. Everybody does. And we want a safe and effective vaccine. But we'll do it the right way. And if you want me to come back here and say it again, I will. Don't worry, Rich. Over and over.
I appreciate that, Dr. Stephen Hahn. I really do. Because, I mean, you being a Philly guy yourself, you know, you understand how cynical people can be. But I'm not. I mean, I'm very optimistic. I'm very hopeful. I really believe in the incredible advances that are being made by the scientific community, by pharmaceutical companies. And it's great to see this kind of mobilization happening. But I like that the FDA is on the outside, there to approve, there to help and approve, but not actually in the mix of the creation of this. That separation, I think, is really critical. It's like you're looking at this from the outside to make sure that they're doing this the right way for us.
Yeah, you know, we're calling the balls and strikes. That's our job. And we have to be independent regulators about this. American people depend upon us. And you're right, we'll provide help to help people develop these, but we'll be the independent folks who calls the balls and strikes. And I can tell you this, no one has told us we have to approve a vaccine, that's for sure. To suggest otherwise, I think, is very unfair.
What goes into the vaccine procedure in terms of if I wanted to say be a volunteer, and I know that there's been this enormous outpouring of Americans who've said I'll be a volunteer. What does that mean, and how do you select how are volunteers selected for those trials?
Yeah, so we put in our guidance what we think are the appropriate criteria for people to be in these trials. There is a website that the NIH has where people can go on and click and actually register to volunteer for one of the vaccine trials. And we've had, as you mentioned, enormous outpouring of support for it. But what we look at is, you know, first of all, there has to be some baseline health. Now, at the other time, you know, at the other point of this is that we want to make sure that we have the right people who would be candidates for a vaccine when it's authorized. And that is those with comorbidities, the elderly, in some cases pregnant women, in communities that are underserved, minority communities, et cetera. And so we want to make sure that those populations are all represented. And we provided guidance to the vaccine manufacturers and the people who are developing this. And they have to go through like a checklist just to make sure that someone is eligible. And they're keeping a very close eye to make sure that it's representative of all Americans. Because at the end of the day, we want to be able to look at the data and the science and say, yep, this can be given to all Americans within this spectrum of folks who've been on the clinical trial. So very carefully paid attention to. And we've been in constant touch with them. And they're doing that as we speak.
Dr. Stephen Hahn joins me. He, of course, is the commissioner of the United States Food and Drug Administration. It's an honor to have him back on the show. And also a guy who served Philadelphia as well. And we always want to mention that as well. You got your Philly roots, of course, being at Penn, right, in Temple?
Yeah, there's a Temple Medical School and then Penn for 18 years in the medical school and in the Department of Radiation Oncology. So, yeah, a terrific being in Philly. My family's still there. It's a great deal of affection for the city and the town and the great work. So it's a great medical town. My goodness, medical schools and great medical care as well.
I have no doubt. That's why if I know for a fact that if somebody calls you up and goes, hey, Han, you got to approve this vaccine. We need you to do this. It's October 15th. You got to do this. You're going to say absolutely not. Not unless it's ready.
Under no circumstances. We've outlined very carefully, Rich, what we're going to do when the data comes in. And just to give you an example of how we're doing this, we're a typical vaccine. We would wait until all the data is in. We would wait. We wouldn't have these ongoing conversations. What we're doing is we're providing a checklist of our vaccine manufacturers and saying, you need to get this data into us. We won't review it until we have these data. And so they're doing it on an ongoing basis so that at the end of the trial, for example, when they've decided that they're ready to submit, we've already looked at a whole bunch of their data. Now, that doesn't mean we've approved it. It just means we have a leg up on it because during coronavirus, the pandemic, we want to make sure that we're moving as quickly as possible. And you and I discussed this a few times, both for therapeutics and for vaccines. This is something that we need to look at institutionalizing, whether we can use this to speed up medical development, not just in COVID-19, but permanently in the future.
Dr. Maz, of course, Dr. Anthony Mazzarelli, your mutual friend, my mutual friend, his suggestion was why not just give people COVID-19 directly, give people volunteer to get the virus, pay them, compensate them, let them actually see if the vaccine works against the actual virus versus, you know, the way it's normally done, where you put people kind of into the wild. Is that something you think that could ever be done in the future?
You know, there are significant ethical concerns about that. I mean, those are called challenge studies, and they have been done in the past. One of the problems, compared to other infectious diseases is that, we just started recently getting therapies for COVID-19, whereas with others, we've had therapies. So if you have something to rescue someone, if a vaccine doesn't work, that's one situation. But if you don't, you know, where we were back in March and April, that's a bit more concerning. So I think we'd all want to get a little bit more experience treating patients with the virus before we did something like that and felt comfortable that it was a safe thing to do for people.
On that note, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about the controversy regarding hydroxychloroquine. And I know a few days ago, I believe you said this is really a decision, like most medications, it should be left between patients and doctors. It's not up to you as FDA commissioner necessarily. But do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, you bet. And there are studies that show it's a benefit. There are quite a few studies, randomized trials, which are high-level data that show that it isn't in certain situations. And so doctors are faced with this all the time, where there's conflicting information, and they have to make the best decision they can for their patients, knowing what other medications they're on, what other diseases they have, and then what do the data show about whether a certain drug works. That's where this belongs. By the way, it doesn't belong in politics. It's a medical and scientific decision, and doctors should make that decision in the privacy of the doctor-patient relationship. Now, FDA is providing information so doctors have it so that they can make that decision. But at the end of the day, it sits with doctors and patients. And believe me, I practiced for 30-plus years. I think that's where this belongs.
Yeah, well, you practice in one of the most important cities in the world, Philadelphia, of course, so there's no doubt that when you say that, it matters. So the good news is the plasma therapies are moving forward at record speed. Your agency is dedicated to making sure that these approvals will be there as quickly as possible, done, of course, with rigorous scientific investigation. And again, if people are ready to give their plasma, please do it, right? It's that important.
It's that important. You could save a life. The other thing is we have coming down the pipeline what's called monoclonal antibodies, which is the next step after plasma where you can manufacture them. And the great thing about these, if they prove to be safe and effective, is that they can be given not just as a treatment, but also as a prophylactic. So almost as a pre-vaccine, if you will, to give some degree of immunity over a period of time before a vaccine's ready. So there's lots of things in the pipeline. And Rich, we have over 150 studies that we're overseeing and more than 500 other agents that are also in the pipeline. So it's very robust, a lot's coming out. We will, of course, review all those as quickly as we can, but also use those rigorous scientific standards you mentioned.
Outstanding. All great news. Dr. Stephen Hahn, the commissioner of the United States Food and Drug Administration, I really appreciate your time coming back to your home city, Philadelphia. We appreciate it, sir. Thank you.
Thanks, Rich, and my best to everybody in Philly, and everybody take care.
Thanks for taking the Zeoli Show with you. Rich Zeoli, weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
All right, that was a good interview. I thought he was great, huh? What a nice guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he really is. That was great. I'm so glad to hear the plasma therapies. You know, and that's the thing. We hear about the increase in the testing, and all we hear about is, oh, the increase in the cases due to the testing. But thank goodness, because of these effective treatments, we don't have as many people being hospitalized. So thank God for that.
And I really like what he said on the vaccine stuff. There's, I like that, the whole idea that, it's not going to be rushed. It's not going to be political. There's no reason for it to be political. That was all really, really good. So obviously
great.
I didn't say Joe Biden's name in that because I didn't want to make it political with the FDA commissioner, but that's who I was talking about, obviously. If you've been listening to the show all morning, you know that. Right?
Absolutely. I mean, we got it. But it could
be. We got it. You got it.
We got it. Joe Biden or any of the, so-called puppeteers.
Now, I just got this text from my friend who is, I should mention, she's a liberal. She hates Trump. She's got kids that are my kids' ages. And I love her. She's a great friend, even though, she and I don't agree politically. But that's the kind of guy I am. I have friends with all kinds of people. But this is what she's freaking out because she said, from my New Jersey teacher friend, the Trenton School District is going virtual starting in September. Staff was told today, word on the street is that there will be an announcement tomorrow and the whole state is going to start virtually in New Jersey. Now, I don't want to be proven right again because I don't like being right. But my point is that even though people on the politics who are the opposite of Trump still want their kids to go back to school because the what unites them is having kids and wanting those kids out of the house and back into school. It trumps politics is my point.
Yes.
Trumps politics completely.
100%.
Well, if that announcement is made tomorrow, I won't be surprised, since the governor of New Jersey is meeting with the NJEA, the New Jersey Education Association, today. I'm glad that the governor of Pennsylvania has reaffirmed, and you said this earlier in your newscast, on that schools can do their own thing. It's not going to be a one-size-fits-all top-down approach. Good.
Yes. That's
Let's
what he says.
Let's hope that that stays. Let's keep our fingers crossed for that, right?
Well, I am. And I think it's also a political football. I mean, Wolf recognizes, right, that people want that freedom. So he's putting it on the local districts. The districts, many of them are trying to put it back on him and saying, no, this is you. So it's very interesting. And I'm glad they recognize it as a political football, that they recognize that it could get people to switch over just on this one singular issue. The parents look at the evidence. I mean, the CDC director, you know, when Redfield testified, you know, and Zioli's talked about this, that was powerful when he testified on Friday and said unequivocally, kids can go back to school. It's safe. They need to go back. And then he started quoting all the statistics about an increase in depression and suicides and self-harm, and kids need to rely on the food programs. I mean, he just rattled off all of these reasons. So I thought that was pretty powerful.
I agree. Who does he look like to me? He looks like somebody.
Like Uncle Fester or something?
Now, remember the Surgeon General, C. Everett Koop?
Oh, yes.
That's who Redfield looks like to me.
Yes.
C. Everett Koop was the big Surgeon General who was against, was it smoking? Was that the big issue back then when he was Surgeon General? Or was it eating oatmeal? Well, that was Wilford Brimley. He died. I can't remember. It all kind of runs around. The same, I forget.
The Surgeon
now.
General has warned eating oatmeal could be hazardous.
Yeah. Eating oatmeal was supposed to keep everybody alive. But Wilford Brimley made it a long time. He was 85 years old. So,
goodness.
It's pretty good. I think the oatmeal helped. It got him another five or 10 years, I think, is what I think.
What did he die of? It wasn't diabetes, was
oatmeal.
It?
Oatmeal. He choked on oatmeal, Quaker oatmeal.
That's a sin.
Uncooked oats. No, I don't know what he died of. Was it diabetes? That's how he used to say it. Do you remember that?
Yeah, diabetes.
Diabetes. He was in Cocoon. Remember that movie?
He was, yeah.
That's his big hit, Cocoon.
Steve Guttenberg.
Yes. Steve Guttenberg, also from Police Academy fame.
Yes.
If you missed it earlier in the show, what's that?
And that's it. He was in Police Academy and Cocoon, and that's it.
And all the Police Academy movies.
He was, yep.
All of them. All 82 Police Academy movies are 17.
Actually, I'm going to show my nerdiness, but I don't think he was in the last few. I think he stopped in like 6 or 7.
Yeah, I think he made it up to 7, and then he said, "You know what? I don't want to lower my prestige as an actor by being in 8, 9, and 10."
Yeah, I
so
mean that
I'm
would just
stop.
Yeah. That would have just tanked his career if he would have done that.
That would be that stain of Police Academyism. You know, you want to be known for other things like Cocoon. So there's
and Short
that.
Circuit. And Short
oh,
Circuit.
Oh, right, Short Circuit. Yes, yeah. I forgot about that. Short Circuit. Bill, do you any of these movies? Have you seen any of these movies?
No.
No.
Yeah.
These kids today.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? You brought up a couple weeks ago Mississippi Burning, and it's on Amazon Prime, and I have it earmarked to watch, and I cannot. I just haven't had time yet, but that is the movie that I have not seen, and because we played that.
It's a great story, Bill. We're all interested in what's in your queue on Amazon Prime.
Well, awesome. I'm going off of
that. Is great radio right there. Tell us what's in your Netflix watch list.
I'm giving you credit for
coming
why?
Up at
you
8:30.
Haven't watched it yet.
Coming up at 8:30, Bill's queue.
Yeah, the stuff Bill may watch in the future. What a dumb thing to say. I mean, you're thanks to you, I plan on watching it sometime.
Well, I've been busy.
So there you go.
Oh, forget it. I don't know why I do this.
No, it's just riveting radio. You're like, the way I selected it, add to queue, yes. Just because of you, I added it to my queue. Oh, man. Oh, by the way, if you missed it earlier in the show, we decided that Hurricane Isaiah, which is the tropical storm or hurricane or whatever it is. I feel like it keeps changing every 5 minutes. I don't know if its identity was actually understood. But I should mention, by the way, on social media, quick check-in, Comic Dave Evans says Brinkley was 85 when he died, but I thought he was 85 in Cocoon. Yeah, it's a great
yeah,
question.
It's true. He was. What was the premise of Cocoon? They never age or something like that? Like Wilford Brimley was 85 since 1986.
Well, didn't they put those guys? Wasn't it like aliens came down and they slept in the alien cocoon or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. I don't really remember the bad.
Ron Howard movie. Directed it. Back to the Ron Howard connection.
No way. Yeah. Did he really? Oh man. Yes, he was also in The Thing, which is one of the best horror movies ever made. Thank you, Road Warrior, for that reminder. Bill, have you seen The Thing?
Yes,
no, but I put it in my queue, and I'm going to watch it in like 2 weeks, and then.
So, Cocoon is a group of trespassing seniors. They swim in a pool containing alien cocoons and find themselves energized with youthful vigor. There's the Cocoon.
Very realistic plot. I like it. Very realistic.
So it was like before Viagra or something.
And we talked about the remake of Jurassic Park earlier. Susie put out a tweet of, I guess, a T-Rex chasing people and saying, this year can't get any worse. Welcome to August. Wilford Brimley, LJC. Wilford Brimley was also in The Natural, one of the greatest movies. Yeah, no, he had a lot of great movies. He really did. His career, it was really Steve Guttenberg who didn't. It was Wilford Brimley who had a lot of good movies.
Well, Steve Guttenberg was also in Three Men and a Baby. Do you remember that movie with Ted Danson?
No, the only thing I remember about that movie was the controversy that there was a ghost in it. Do you remember?
There was a ghost. Or it was a stand-in. It was like a
This is as kids was one of those things that made us talk about. We talked about that all the time. That the kid who died from eating soda with Pop Rocks. Remember?
Yeah,
Mikey.
Yeah, that was Mikey. Yeah, who died from
Mikey likes a kid died apparently from eating soda and Pop Rocks. Three Men and a Baby had a ghost in it. These were the kind of things that we talked about as kids. No, we obsessed relentlessly over them.
Nobody would have cared about Three Men and a Baby unless there was some sort of controversy around it, because it was a terrible movie.
It was now who was in that again? Steve Guttenberg and
Ted Danson,
and Ted Danson.
Yeah. Where they had to raise a baby, three guys.
Now, was this before Ted Danson went blackface or after? Before, pre-blackface?
It was pre-Ted Danson blackface when he did that skit with Whoopi Goldberg.
Okay, I can't keep track. It's harder to keep track of that. Yes. If you missed it earlier in the show, we decided that Hurricane Isaiah is actually named after the mermaid in the movie Splash, which was directed by Ron Howard. His daughter, Bryce Dallas Howard, is also in Jurassic Park. Everything keeps coming around. It's like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon today.
Yes.
This is the scene in the movie Splash where they confirm her name is, in fact, what they named the hurricane after. Go ahead.
What's your name?
It's hard to say in English.
Well, just say in your language.
All right. My name is...
So we'll just call this Hurricane Madison. I think it's easier. That's what we'll do right there. It'll be easier for everybody.
I love it.
Speaking of being offended by things, cancel culture on Real Time with Bill Maher over the weekend. They discussed this with the former editor of the New York Times who resigned, Barry Weiss, because she was tired of all the censorship that goes on at the New York Times and how they're only playing for their audience and they're not allowing ideas to be exposed to all people. And they talked about cancel culture a lot. It's a thing, you know. It's not just canceling. It's canceling and punishing and ruining you and trying to run you out of town and you'll never work in this town again. The problem, though, is that it's completely inconsistent. I mean, the problem is it should never happen, but it's also entirely inconsistent. It's all over the board. Some people get a pass. Other people are ruined forever. This is Barry Weiss with Bill Maher, Cut 2.
What I meant in that letter when I wrote that Twitter's the assigning editor, what I mean by that is that in order to do our job well, writers and editors, we need to have a level of bravery and thick skin and fearlessness. And when you are living in fear of an online mob, you know, all it takes is a dozen people to repeat a lie about you, that you're a racist, that you're a transphobe, that you're a bigot, for that lie to become true. And that's extremely dangerous. Now, the thing that insulates it is that when you have leaders at the top who say, we don't care about that outside noise, we're going to stand by you and the truth that you're pursuing no matter what. The problem that happened at the Times, and that's referenced in the letter, the Harper's letter that Thomas helped shape, is that my boss got fired for running an op-ed by a sitting U.S. senator. Now, you might say that Tom Cotton is detestable, that you disagree with him, but I don't want to live in a world where the views of half of the country can't be heard in the paper of record. And that's, I fear, where we're headed.
And not only were people outraged over the fact the New York Times ran an op-ed from Tom Cotton. I mean, it was to the point of, I will cancel my subscription. How dare you? And then the mob again. And I've always said this, the mob is not real. It's like a shadow of a mouse. You click on the light and then suddenly now you realize it's a tiny little mouse. But on social media, it's very loud. The tweets and Facebook and all of this, it's very, very loud. And unfortunately now, corporate America cowers to this in a big way. They actually gave credit to Trader Joe's on the show because Trader Joe's, it was a story that they were going to rename all their products, like Trader Giuseppe's and all the other ethnic sounding nods. But no, Trader Joe's said, we're not doing that. They backed away from doing that. It was fake news. And they actually gave Trader Joe's credit for that, for not giving in to the mob, the cancel culture mob. And the thing about it is that when all these liberals had to write this letter to come out and say, like, enough is enough. You know, J.K. Rowling and these others, they wrote this letter on the cancel culture and they said, enough, okay? You have to stop doing this before we lose our plays and our movies and our books and our thoughts and ideas. It was laughed at and derided by so many people whose response to that was, cancel the people writing the letter saying we shouldn't have a cancel culture anymore. And then, and you've got on Bill Maher's show, I mean, they're all liberals on that show, and they're talking about the people that are doing this now are all their own people. It's the liberals doing this to liberals. Liberals canceling liberals over the fact that they don't like the idea that some liberals are actually open to ideas and disagreement. I mean, how many people on the left would love to cancel Bill Maher? They call him a racist, an Islamophobe, a misogynist, a sexist, because he doesn't play into the doctrine. But here's the thing. People on the right hate Bill Maher because Bill Maher is one of the guys that's out there trying to constantly get rid of Donald Trump. But I mean, isn't it funny, though, that like you could be a Trump hater and you could be absolutely the kind of person that says most of the things they like. But if you break with every, in other words, if you disagree or have a different take on something, you're not lockstep on everything with them. That's, yep, canceled. Enough. Enough is, you're done. You're gone. And I don't play that game. You know, I try to bring on dissenting ideas and dissenting thoughts. And every now and then I'll get an email from somebody. Why'd you bring that person on? I don't want to hear that stuff. Well, you know, look, we can't live in a bubble. It's not healthy. It's not good. It's not good for debate and dissension. But it also makes, I think when people approach it from that perspective of like, well, I can't play that interview or I can't have that guest on or I can't do this or my audience won't like it. It's really insulting to the audience. And I don't think of you that way. I think of you as a very capable person who's able to think for yourself. But isn't it interesting that the New York Times, the response to the mob was fire somebody for publishing an op-ed because we don't want to expose our audience to a different opinion because it upsets them. And really what it comes down to is A, protecting themselves from the backlash of their people. B, profits, right? Because they're really just really afraid of losing their audience. And the people go, I'm going to cancel my subscription. That's it. Oh, and C, I've got to insulate you, protect you from these scary thoughts from scary U.S. senators. I've got to protect you from hearing their ideas. So I'll keep you nice and safe and coddled in your little cocoon. Huh? Your little cocoon. Wilford Brimley, no, nothing, too soon. All right, and then you'll be fine. You won't have to worry about getting diabetes. Cultural diabetes. I'm still thinking about him saying that. Diabetes. That's in my head.
Yes.
All day long, people are going to be walking around. Every time they hear Hurricane Isaiah, they're going to hear the mermaid from Splash breaking TVs, and they're going to hear diabetes. Wilford Brimley all day. That's all they're going to get out of the show. Nothing on the FDA commissioner, nothing on the Utilis Gym guys. It'll be those two things right there. All right. By the way, Brian on Twitter, Greg, says that the rumor about Mikey is fake news. He's still alive. And there's a Snopes fact check. Hey, listen, pal. I didn't say it was true. I said no. I was obsessed about it when I was a kid.
No, yeah, exactly. And there wasn't really a, like newsflash, there wasn't really a ghost in Three Men and a Baby. I mean, come on. Like,
right. Brian from KYW is checking that, too. He's fact checking that.
These were urban legends that we as kids all believed in the 80s when we were growing up.
It was also, remember the Wizard of Oz that one of the guys hanged himself?
Oh yeah, right? in the
one of the monkey actors.
Yes.
The flying monkey actors. I think, right? Well, so whatever happened with little Mikey then after he didn't die of Pop Rocks and soda? What did he go on to do?
I think he was on
his life.
I think he was in Cocoon 2.
Now that's just funny.
Oh man, I love that stuff. Do you know that I should ask Dr. Hahn about this? The FDA actually had set up a telephone hotline to assure anxious parents that fizzing candy would not cause children to choke. I should ask them about that instead of the vaccine.
No, I think the vaccine stuff was pretty good.
You think that was better? Dawn, have your kids ever had Pop Rocks?
Yeah.
Really?
No, they haven't. No one believes that. They haven't even had soda. What? So there's no way the two could mix that combination.
True. No, because all that stuff is bad for you.
Little Mikey,
rumor.
By the...
Go ahead, Greg.
Little Mikey, his real name is John Gilchrist, and he is the director of media sales for the MSG Network. So that's where Little Mikey went. So just in case anybody,
it's a good gig.
Anybody cares or anybody wants to know, I can't believe I just Googled that. But sorry to interrupt you on what you were saying. But
no,
you know.
Can you imagine his interview? They're like, so did you really die from Pop Rocks and soda? No, because I'm here
now. But thank you. Yeah.
How many times does that guy get annoyed at work by people who think they're funny going up to him going, Mikey likes it?
Oh, God. Can you imagine?
No.
Right. That probably annoys the hell out of him. People probably do it to him all the time. Right. Hey, want to have my sandwich? I know you like it.
Ugh.
No, the rumor was a kid ate 6 bags of Pop Rocks at a party, yep. Then proceeded to drink a 6-pack of Pepsi. The two substances combined in his stomach and exploded, killing him horribly. That's why Pop Rocks were taken off the market in the early 80s.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. This is the stuff that Mama Zioli believed, and I couldn't have Pop Rocks when I was a kid. You know?
I can just imagine a little Rich saying, Mom, can I have Pop Rocks? And no, Mikey's stomach exploded.
Yeah, no, it killed Mikey, the kid who likes the cereal. It killed him.
She doesn't sound like that.
The company stopped marketing.
Oh, be careful,
baby. It's her birthday tomorrow, by the way. Mama Zioli's birthday.
Oh, wow. Happy birthday.
Yeah. We're going to have a special Mama Zioli tribute on the show tomorrow.
Yes.
The company stopped marketing Pop Rocks around 1983, and it is often pointed to as proof that the candy was so harmful it had to be pulled from the shelves. What's less known is that Kraft bought the rights to the product from General Foods in 1985 and then marketed it as Action Candy through a company named Carbonated Candy. Pop Rocks are now back out in the open, though, and are again marketed under their original Pop Rocks name with the headline, This Will Kill Your Kids. No, that's fake news, but they are back. So there you go. Amazing.
Oh, God.
855-839-1210. 855-839-1210.
The Rich Zioli Show on your schedule. This is the Zioli Show podcast.
I was talking earlier about how Joe Biden is moving so far to the left, and Charles is in Illinois. He wanted to weigh in on that. Charles, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Yeah, what I found interesting in those comments with Ilhan and Bernie, it's like they're doing it completely backwards. I mean, usually in the primaries, they'll run to the extremes and then act like they're centrists when they run in the general. But now it's the other way around. Like all the Democratic primary voters who voted for Biden probably did it because he was a centrist. If they wanted a crazy coup, they could have voted for anybody else. And then now they're telegraphing the fact that, yeah, once we get them in there, we're going to push them all the way to the left. They're shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's really amazing that this is happening. So do you agree with my theory that they're really worried that progressive voters won't come out and vote for him?
You know, I think you're right. I think, like, the progressives are such purists that they're like, hey, I didn't get Bernie. I didn't get all these other crazies. Screw you. I'm staying home. You guys can have Trump.
Yeah, because otherwise I think they would never be coming out there and saying these things. Because to your point, they got to appeal to moderate voters now. You don't appeal to the hard left. That's what primaries are about.
Exactly.
So, hey, Charles, how's summer in Illinois? Because Dawn's going there in a few days, and I heard that it's nice and cool in the summer. Is that true?
It is right now. The last few days have been brutally hot and humid, but we've got a little bit of a cooling spell, maybe partly cloudy, not a lot of rain in the forecast.
All right. Dawn, it's going to be a nice time there. Way cooler than Florida, Dawn.
All right.
Going to see family.
Good fight.
Thanks, Charles. Appreciate
Thanks, Charles.
It, buddy.
Thanks for the weather update.
We appreciate
no
that.
Problem.
Got to call back and let us know how it is later in the week.
Yeah.
All right. 855-839-1210. Dawn, speaking of Dawn, good morning, Dawn. Let's say good morning and check in. What's cooking?
Hey, we got a lot cooking right now. Zioli Show News Live is sponsored by T-Mobile this morning, 80 degrees, and we've already got warnings and watches due to Tropical Storm Aisa. So we'll be talking about that as well. So the back to school news, because we're always talking about that and updating the cases of back to school. So the Chester Upland School District, this is Delaware County, Pennsylvania, they're the first to go 100% viral, virtual, I should say, online classes. They will begin this fall. So we'll see what the rest of Delco does. A lot of districts in Delaware County and across our region in the suburbs are doing a hybrid so far, with a few days online and a few days getting kids in class. So we'll see what happens. By the way, School District of Philadelphia says with students and staff home for their all virtual start to the school year, they're going to be able to take care of much needed work on buildings. So they're going to be improving the ventilation in schools. They say that's a big priority because of all the concerns. Yoli has talked about this, over how poor airflow could actually possibly spread COVID-19. That from Superintendent William Height. So he says out of the 220 school buildings, about 10%, a little over 10%, were found to be below approval. They don't really pass the test. So they're going to be repairing their HVAC, their windows, air circulation, and that sort of thing. So at least they'll have time, they say, to fix that up. And they are scheduled, allegedly, to go back in mid-November. So we'll see about that. This morning, Eagles training camp begins its second week with Deuce Staley stepping up since head coach, obviously, Doug Peterson, testing positive for COVID-19. Peterson is set to be quarantined for at least 5 days, we're told. So Staley, assistant head coach and running backs coach, he's going to be in charge of all the day-to-day operations at the NovaCare complex. So we're told Peterson will be able to take part in those virtual meetings remotely from home during his quarantine. He's asymptomatic. He released a statement saying he's fine. So that's how it's going to work, and training camp continues. Going viral, and before I get to the big weather watches and what's going to happen weather-wise, just real quick, going viral, details from an underage sex slave in the Jeffrey Epstein case. So his accused, Madam Ghislaine Maxwell, is facing trial. As you know, we've talked a lot about it, but these court documents are being made, you know, being made public, getting released during all the process. And in them, one victim, Virginia Gouffray, says she was an underage teen when forced to spend 2 days back in the day along. She was servicing Prince Andrew. So she testified that the royal especially enjoyed licking between her toes. That it was a toe fetish.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh, it's kind of disgusting.
Yeah, it's kind of nasty. So I thought I'd give you that. So
never understood the toe thing. Never got that.
No, wasn't there somebody...
I believe there was a host on WPHT at one point who also might have had a...
Was it toe licker?
It's possible. Might have been. Possible.
That was the only reason I did that story, just so you could... So I could bait you into that.
Well done. Well done, Dawn. Well done.
So the NBC 10 First Alert forecast, National Weather Service and PECO and all the power companies bracing for this thing. They have issued a tropical storm watch. It is in effect for New Jersey, Delaware, Pennsylvania. It's coming. So this evening through tomorrow evening, floods, rainfall, heavy, high winds, all expected. So this from the National Weather Service. And this is Tropical Storm Isaias. So it's after Isaiah. It's the Spanish word for Isaiah. So the flood watch in effect. We could see up to 4 inches of rainfall within less than 24-hour period. So it's going to be some nasty weather, unfortunately, headed our way. But then by Wednesday, we clear out, and we have mid-80s through the rest of the week. So we just have to get through this next 24 hours and hope it's not so bad. Obviously, in Florida and around the East Coast, everybody's dealing with this, a lot of emergencies and that sort of thing. So sponsored by T-Mobile, now that T-Mobile and Sprint have merged, T-Mobile's network is not only bigger, it's better than ever before. So T-Mobile adding more towers, more engineers, more coverage. So now you don't have to choose between an amazing network and amazing prices. Philadelphia at T-Mobile, get both. I'm Dawn, Zioli Show News Live. We're always on the radio.com app.
Thank you, Dawn. Appreciate that. 855-839-1210 is our number. Let me go to Jay in Florida. Jay, good morning. How are things down in Florida?
I don't know. He wanted to cat three or higher. Right now, everything's fine.
Okay. Are you guys worried down there? Are you by the coast?
Nah, I'm in Central Florida. We're fine here, man. Okay. Winds are pretty dead. No big deal. Yeah, so I'm just calling in regards to some of your cancel culture comments. I kind of feel as though the cancel culture is actually having an opposite reaction. I really like your analogy about the mouse in the shadow, because it's really a vocal minority who screeches at the top of their lungs. And then people like myself, even people, I think even people that are as far left as what would now be considered center left or independent, I think they tire of it too. I think, you know, when you look at sports, it's something that unites people who otherwise would have major differences as far as ideology is concerned. And now it had something that once united us now divides us. And I, you know, if you look at the MLB and the NBA, their day two numbers as far as viewership, they're identical to Tom Brady and Peyton Manning's golf philanthropy. They both pulled in around 5.8 million viewers. So it took between two leagues, they barely had the same amount of viewership as, you know, a philanthropy.
Right.
So I think that the cancel culture is actually causing an inverse cancel culture. People like myself who had MLB.TV, paid a subscription every year, you know, now I'm just going to take my Sundays for hunting and gym time and church.
Well, listen, I think you put it right. It's like a inverse effect. Well said, Jay. Listen, buddy, take care and good luck down there during all this nonsense in the next few days. Always appreciate to hear from you on that stuff. Coming up, the legend himself, my man, Vince Papale, Mr. Invincible. He will be here in just a few minutes. They're doing an amazing, amazing thing to help out and salute our first responders during all of this. The people on the front lines are in this entire pandemic. And, you know, I'm a huge Vince Papale fan. He's a great guy. And it turns out he's a fan. Who knew, right? So he'll be here in just a few minutes.
Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.